Welcome to the Index Podcast, hosted by Alex Kahaya. Plug in as we explore new frontiers with Web3 and the decentralized future.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to The Index, brought to you by The Graph, where we talk with the entrepreneurs building the next wave of the internet. We do this because we believe that people are worth knowing and that you can benefit from knowing the why that's driving the future of the internet. I'm your host, Alex Kahaya, and today I'm excited to welcome Zach Anderson Pettit, host of the FinTech Family Hour podcast and the U.S. Content Director for Money 2020, the world's leading conference on payments and financial services innovation. Today, we're going to dive into the critical topic of reimagining the future of finance, exploring Web3 innovators disrupting the industry, and what's next for crypto, and getting a sneak peek at Money 2020 upcoming conference in Las Vegas next month. Zach, thanks for being on the show.
Alex, great to meet you, man. Wonderful intro and excited to, you tee it up in such a fun way. I'm like, makes me feel like I know something about the future of finance. I guess we're about to find out.
Yeah. I mean, let's start out with some of the basics, like walk everybody through who you are, some of your background, and let's get the sort of genesis story that is your career.
Yeah. So I would go honestly as far back as my childhood, at least to kind of start quickly. So I'm from Kansas City, payday loan capital of, I always say payday loan capital of the world. I don't know how true that is. I don't know how much payday loans exist in that form outside of the US. I know there's, you know, probably somebody breaking somebody's knees somewhere, but Kansas City really was formative in terms of that. It was very, very have and have not. And the have nots is kind of the area I grew up in, like between, you know, two check cashing places and a Popeyes, basically. And growing up in that experience, you just kind of had this, you know, how does this money thing work? And then my dad went bankrupt when I was a kid. Fast forward in college, I ended up doing an internship at Merrill Lynch. So I've just always had this like money thing, not that driven by money, but just fascinated by the how the system economy works and kind of the underpinning incentives and all that. And it's just, I've never been able to answer all my questions. So I've just kept going deeper and deeper into it. And finally in college, I just kind of had this moment of, good Lord, this industry's broken. I was doing an internship at a very specific investment bank, and I figured out that we were not acting as a fiduciary, and that felt wild that that was even legal. And I was kind of decided from there, I want to spend the rest of my life in finance and hopefully leave it a little bit better than I found it, sort of a thing. So since then, I've worked in banks, worked in robo-advisors, worked in banking as a service in San Francisco, all the way to now being at Money 2020. And I can jump into very specific details on all of that, but basically my why is let's fix some of this and make it less painful than it is right now.
Yeah. So your why is like, we need a better financial system. What would you boil that down to? I mean, I know it's like, let's fix some of this, but what are the top three things that are why you're here? Dude, being in payday lending, that is one of the most broken and negatively impactful spaces. So I've actually done some research into that and how crypto could be leveraged there to create a more fair system. What are your top three things?
So top three things, just like off the top of my head. One is getting people paid when they make the damn money, right? There's this concept of earned wage access. I think that is like the beginning of it, right? This idea that, okay, I'm a Walmart employee. I work for a single day. I should be able to take that home with me versus the idea of waiting every 2 weeks and having to manage my cash flow around that 2 weeks and all that kind of thing, right? So moving even from the idea of earned wage access of every day into this idea of like streaming pay or whatever it might be, right? Like hypothetically, you have, you're, you know, streaming this right now and four people jump on it and they're like, Alex, you're doing a wonderful job. Could they just pay you as it's happening? If you're a Walmart employee, could you be making, you know, whatever that 14, I don't know how much it is an hour, but whatever that hourly is, broken down, going directly into your account while you're actually working, right? And be able to manage cash flow in an entirely different way. That I think is huge. You got to pay people. And then from there, if you're going to be lending to them, you need to do it in a way where they actually have the ability to pay it back. So I would say like the payday lending thing is one of it. I think it's more just responsible lending. And part of responsible lending is actually the data and the underwriting and everything that goes into that, right? Like the reason that payday lenders are payday lenders is because of the gerrymandering and like the, you know, the way that we have actually kind of built our financial system around these community banks that lend into certain areas and don't lend into others, and big banks that, you know, function here but don't function there. So I'd say our industry basically understanding the data that does matter when it comes to underwriting, and then actually having the ability to use it. Cause that's one of the things that happens a lot, I think, in especially TradFi, where we figure out this thing that, oh man, if we do this, then the payback rate is going to be this much higher, or we're going to be able to lend into this group and we weren't able to before. But then you have to go get that through a legislative body or get it into a regulation where you can actually, you know, use that and it's not against some sort of fair lending or anything along those lines. So those would be my two. And then my third is like a really big overarching umbrella over Washington, D.C. And I think I kind of just hit on D.C. a little bit in terms of those first two pieces, but we as an industry need to engage with Washington, D.C., I think, in a way that we are not right now. And I think that's especially true when you look at, you know, kind of talking about some Web3 stuff, maybe, you know, I think the industry has made a real effort to engage with the SEC. The SEC is maybe not making the same effort, especially from on high with Mr. Gensler. You know, it's stuff like that that we are trying to bring to the show. That's why we have Hester Pierce at the show. Like, it, basically everything that we've talked about at the beginning of this is like, that's the filter that I use to bring things on stage too. So I'd say the Washington thing though is probably my biggest drum that I'm hitting over and over again right now. Like, regulation and legislation and rulemaking matters, and I think most of our industry doesn't take a ton of time to think about it or read it or engage in it.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing is like fair money, a fair financial system.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a much more succinct version of it. Yeah. I mean, but that's the problem, right, man? It's like, there's so many pieces to the unfairness that like, how do you unpack the unfairness to make it fair? Like, it's so broken that you just, you kind of have to speak in generalities, or else it's a really slippery slope on specifics.
Well, it's like, where do you start, right? So you got to unpack it, but you also have to look for low hanging fruit, right? Where can you make impact in the shortest amount of time, given the constraints, right? Like, the regulatory environment is no joke. It's like impossible to navigate, and it's a decades long effort that requires significant capital and time and energy and human resource.
Maybe, but the other side is like, maybe more founders could just pick up a phone and call their senator. I agree with you, but I also think there is low hanging fruit to your earlier point that we could be doing more of that I don't think we are.
That is a good point. So at this point in the podcast is where we say, pick up the phone and call your senator. I think it's a great message, honestly. Like, if you believe in what we're trying to build together, pick up the phone and call your senator. Maybe call them like every month. And one thing I really care about this show, The Index, my why is people are worth knowing, and I want to share their why. Why are they here? Why are they here building this? Because I think we have tried to do a good job, but we need to do much better about explaining the why behind that drives every entrepreneur and innovator and investor and developer that's building in Web3 and building the future of finance, and distribute that message as wide as possible, whether it's directly to your senator or just through like content marketing on all of your social media channels, because I think that is one of the biggest things that has been lost and that they are missing, because they're like, you know, they're looking at, oh, it's scams, it's FTX, it's collapse, it's like unregulated money. And they're missing the why that is has so many of us passionately building.
Yeah, it's a storytelling endeavor. Like, I think that there's this sense amongst especially Web3 folks that I will even say like we, like I kind of put myself in portions of that bucket, you know, or else like I don't think I could really do the job. But I think there's this sense that Web3 has been slighted by Washington or like never got that chance. And to me, there's a disconnect there where like, it's not as if the TradFi people haven't worked their asses off to get those relationships, and that there isn't some back and forth in terms of the ways those relationships get built, you know? And one thing that the movement of crypto or the movement of Web3 from my perspective is missing is like that person to stand at the helm of it and really be the storyteller and the one that develops the narrative around why it's important, to your point. And I don't know if that person exists. Like, I mean, I think Brian Armstrong does an okay job of it, but he's trying to run a company. I think Naval kind of does it, but he's quiet now. Like, and then like Balaji comes out of left field and just freaks everybody out. Like, it's really hard to find the actual person to lead the charge on the narrative of Web3. And, you know, the SBFs of the world don't help, to your point.
Yeah, I totally agree. We as a space need to own that narrative and have somewhat of a shared narrative. I mean, I can tell you from the entrepreneurs that I know, our whys are slightly different, but there's a lot of overlap, right? Like if you start looking at the patterns, there's maybe like 5 to 10 whys out there that drive people to be in this space, whether it's a passion around like privacy, like you believe privacy and censorship resistance and like access are human rights. That's a why. I happen to believe that too. One of my like other personal whys for being in this space is I believe that the true power of Web3 is in its ability to enable us to control our own destinies. How we do that is through open source software running on permissionless blockchain networks. That's one of my messages. But I agree with you, like we need more people and I want to figure out how to empower those people to tell that story. Like that's the whole reason for this podcast to exist is literally to tell those stories. And one thing I'm really excited about with you is through Money 2020 and probably through your podcast too, like you have a really broad view. I didn't take that Money 2020 was all about blockchain, right? It's like,
oh yeah, definitely not. Yeah.
And so you have like a broad view of what's happening, who's building what are the opportunities out there? And I'm like, just generally, what are the trends you're seeing coming out of there and how does that apply to the future of the internet? And just to be clear, like I bucket the future of the internet. Web3 is not just blockchain and crypto. It's like AR, AI, VR. It's like these fintech initiatives that are maybe not even using blockchain technology. So just what's your overview? What's the broad overview of the market? What are you seeing?
I don't want to be a broken record, but that Washington thing like matters. I think that we're hitting a point where engaging in Washington is no longer an option. The background of this is basically forever the world has thought regulation was boring, right? This idea, like everything that we've ever programmed previous to this year, I would say that involved regulation, most people are like, mass news fest, right? All of a sudden, like Coinbase and the SEC are in a lawsuit. All of a sudden, the CFTC is making all these rules. Like all of a sudden, Washington is just fascinating. And if you're not paying attention to it, you can't get through a Bankless episode without talking about the SEC or without talking about, you know, some portion of Washington, D.C. So this year we actually have like on Sunday, we have a Washington Explained thing that is literally just pulling apart what we were just talking about, right? Like you write a letter to your senator, you call your senator, but where do you go from there? So that is a huge piece of it. Having Hester Pierce come is a huge piece of it. Having Michael Hsu from the OCC come is like, those are the fact that people are excited about having regulators come to the show, I think says a ton about where we're at right now as a industry. From there, I would say that one of the more overarching, like interesting pieces here is that the boring stuff is becoming a little bit sexier, right? To that point about Washington. The second piece is I think that there's like a whole bunch of really important pieces in the world of fintech that we have not leaned into and solved. And this is true of fintech, financial services, all of it, right? But it's the boring stuff that you probably aren't thinking about, right? So here's an example. Have you ever heard of a word called escheatment?
No.
Okay.
I don't know what that is.
Yes. I think it was 2 weeks ago that I found out what escheatment was officially.
Educate me. What are we doing? What is this?
So escheatment is what happens when a chartered financial institution has accounts that are dormant in the institution for a set period of time. I believe it's 2 years, if I remember correctly. So if you think about the neobank wave, right, be that consumer, be that business, like all of these banks stood up. And then all of a sudden, there's going to be a lot of dormant accounts in those banks that are going to have to then be taken and given either like the funds either have to go to the state or to the federal government. There's like this all this paperwork that happens around the background, right? So if you're thinking about like Chime or any of these neobanks, they probably have a very significant percentage of their accounts that are dormant that are now going to have to start going through this escheatment process. No one has talked about escheatment in the past 5 to 7 years, right? I've heard this term come up a number of times in the last couple months, and 2 weeks ago, actually met a founder that is building an automated process for escheatment, right? I met a founder this week at TechCrunch that is building a company literally to help companies shut down and help venture-backed companies shut down specifically. It's called Simple Closure. It's skating where the puck's gonna be. And maybe it's not all wildly positive. Some of it is, you know, building software for a easier death in some ways, right? Or an easier kind of offboarding. Death is probably too intense of a word, but it's a thing, right?
Yeah, you live to fight another day as an entrepreneur. Your company dies, but you know, you still live to fight another day.
Yeah, but I mean, 9 out of 10 companies fail. And I think it's funny that we as an industry, I mean, in fintech and in tech in general, have never really brought or built the tools to allow companies to shut down in a way that is straightforward. They know they're doing it right. You know, there's not really a playbook there. So anyways, I don't say this because the company shutting down is the exciting part of what's happening, but it's this boring, like, other stuff that we haven't thought about for a long time, right? Like, Plaid solved one of the biggest problems in fintech, and like, it's been solved. So now we're going to go, you know, like, solve all these others. Those are two. The boring becoming sexy is really big. And then I think that there's just a really strong power law rule associated with AI right now. There's no funding, no funding, no funding. Databricks raises $500 million, right? Like, that was just a very kind of sudden thing. And pretty much everything that we're seeing unfold is like that, right? And it's all AI related. So that one's a little bit of a softball and like too obvious, but I can't not say it. So,
yeah, I mean, we have to talk about AI. Let's dig into that. I mean, what can people expect at Money 2020 related to AI? And what's the coolest use case you've seen?
Like, coolest actual use case?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to be honest with you, and I'm going to say that I don't know at this point. There's some cool customer service stuff happening, but like, that's not cool, right? Like, the actual AI stuff that I think is going to be cool is, you know, real-time payments software that's able to help you understand if a, you know, if a purchase is likely fraudulent in the moment versus in retrospect, right? That kind of stuff's fascinating. But the reason that I started to answer the question the way I did was I don't think that we have any sense of what the cool use case is, what the killer use case in finance is yet. I don't know if we really even understand the difference between a lot of what we've been doing for a long time versus generative AI. Like, I don't know if we as an industry have taken the time to stop and think about what this could really mean versus just leaning all the way into the hype. And I've had a lot of people ask me, you know, like, well, what's the biggest AI conversation at Money 2020 this year? Like, undoubtedly, it is Ali Ghadzi, the CEO of Databricks, being interviewed by Sarah Guo, who's a large VC in the space. But every single conversation, I think, probably in some way, shape, or form will at least allude to it. There's been a lot of pressure on me internally to like turn it into a vertical, but it's a horizontal. Like, it's going to touch everything, right? So the idea to like verticalize it as just like, it's not as fun. So I candidly don't know. I think I will know at the end of the show, and I will actually have an answer then. But I don't think a lot of these companies
have We should do a recap episode.
I'm happy to do that.
Yeah, I would love to do that. And we can like see what we learned. One of the cool ideas that I've seen, it's not necessarily directly related to fintech, but I use ChatGPT extensively. It helps me, I mean, massively, like market research type activities that would take me like a month to compile all that data. I can just get creative with my prompts and I get information like instantly. The one limitation is data. Its model only has data. And now it's up to January 2022. I'm amazed at actually how fast they caught up from 2021. They were used to be limited to 2021. But I think the data piece, the data pipelines, and feeding that into these different AI models is actually going to be the most interesting part of all of this. What the AI does with that is a big unknown, to your point. I recently ran into a company called Uproxx, and I'm going to have them on the show. And what they're doing is, these guys are really good at acquiring users in emerging markets for like pennies. What they do is they're building like a proxy network where you get tokens for mining data on the internet when you're not using your phone. They like use your bandwidth and you get paid for that. And then they dump all this data into an API. A developer can use that and they can almost do it on demand. They can like ask it questions and it will feed data from the proxy network. I mean, it's not quite on demand. Like, that would be very hard to do, but the business model, though, is they get this token and then they can use that token to top off their minutes on their cellular device. So they earn like just enough to do this airtime top off thing. And there's all sorts of fintech plays that can be tied into that. the economic model is about data for AI, but it's going to enable all these other fintech, fair fintech, banking the unbanked, and then providing them access to things like DeFi lending and just basic banking services via the app, like are possible, right? Like when you start building networks like this that are incentivized to do things like route packets or get data or do something that rewards the user for tokens, I think that that's going to bootstrap millions of users into a fintech app that like they're already kind of used to a lot of this stuff, but it's not permissionless and they don't actually own like their data or the money that's involved in these applications. So anyway, that's my two cents. It's the data and how it onboards people to other use cases is thing that I think is like an unintended positive potential consequence.
It reminds me of a company that's going to be at the show actually called Redeem. I would think of them as basically the single sign-on layer using your cell phone number to get exactly into what you're talking about, right? Because I think there's this like, how are we going to onboard people into Web3 without them knowing that they're being onboarded into Web3, right? Like nobody wants to, like not nobody, but you and I are happy to onboard into Web3, right? But like our moms are not on, they're not on the same page. So how do we actually get them there, right? And like using the phone number as that single sign-on, as that single source, you know, is a fascinating thing. And yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I also think like latent compute, everything you're talking about is definitely things that we're going to sort out. I mean, we have NVIDIA doing, you know, a big sponsor summit at the show and alongside AWS. And one of the reasons that I'm, you know, not really at this point answering the question of like, what's the most interesting use case is like, you know, they're going to be doing some demos, some conversations, things like that. Like I think inside of that summit, I will probably find out the answer to the thing. And I would just be actually shocked if I knew it right now. And I think that's the exciting part about this, right? Is like, if you're a person that feels like you need an answer, whew, shit, is this a hard time, right?
But yeah. go to Money 2020 is the TLDR there. Like show up, you'll probably get some answers. Can't promise you all the answers, but at least directionally, you might catch some trends.
Exactly. Yeah, but I think it's like swimming in the uncertainty right now is kind of how you find the magic. And I think just being okay not knowing your exact answer to how we're going to leverage AI, you know, if you're a community bank, or I actually think it's, you know, a lot of people are probably taking their eye off of the actual ball of the business if they spend too much time on it right now versus thinking about, you know, just thinking about it in the back of their head, go to Money 2020, experience some, you know, some demos, whatever. And then maybe you have, you know, your answer after that. But I think people are trying to get to that answer too fast and not taking in all of the potential inputs that could get them to the right answer.
I think you make a really good point. And we ran into this in the blockchain space the last like couple of years where tons of funding poured in, unlimited capital resources, basically. And a lot of things have been built that never had product market fit and we're never going to get it. And some things that have it in crypto, but it's all like, it's not going to get past the early adopter phase, which might be okay for some of these protocols. Like some of these DeFi things are big enough to sustain themselves, but it's not that many. And so I think like, whether it's crypto or building an AI, you just got to, or whether you're like a local bank trying to figure out like, what do we do with AI? Focus on what are your real problems? And then go to this event, do some research and cross-pollinate these ideas. Like that's where innovation comes from, is when you have a real business problem that you're focused on that a lot of people have, they all see it and there's some budget there that they want to like solve that problem. And you can bring in something unique that 10x's the solution there, but like, the only way you get there is by being really, really focused on that problem, that like real business need. ChatGPT is a great example. Like I always had Google. I could search for stuff, right? And find the answers. It's just that it made it like so much easier for me to get that it's a no-brainer to spend $20 a month. Like it's just a no-brainer because it's like magic. It really is like magic.
You know, it's this co-pilot revolution. One thing that is going to happen, I think we can all agree on, is that piece, right? Like the idea that we're going to have a co-pilot inside of our banking app, inside of this, inside of that. Like, I mean, the idea that we're actually even going to really be driving, you know, that's not finance as much, but like this all overlaps, right? Like all of this technology and all of the compute required and the expanding compute requirement, like all of it is kind of leading in the same direction of like, I mean, we're kind of finally getting the Peter Thiel thing of like, you know how he complained about not getting the flying car? Well, I feel like we're kind of almost at the flying car, right? Like you get on Instagram, you see people on jetpacks, like we're in a different world now.
Yep. I couldn't agree more. I realized we haven't actually talked about your podcast And I'm just curious to learn more about that. What is the show? What's it about? What's the format? Who are the guests that you've had on? Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so I'll actually hilariously give you the founding story even because it relates to Money 2020. So we were, I was at a bank called NBKC and we were like really early into the fintech space, I would say, is because behind every Chime, like we were talking about earlier, is a community bank, right? Or a set of community banks. When I was at this bank, we were trying to kind of be that sponsor bank behind a number of Chime-esque, current-esque kinds of groups. And we were going to a lot of different conferences. We were going to see a lot of companies. We were sitting in a lot of conference rooms outside of Kansas City. And my CEO from the bank, Brian Unruh, basically said, like, what if we did something that didn't make it so we had to get on a plane all the time? I don't know if it was actually in the Vegas airport or in the New York airport, but it was really close to Money 2020 that he was like, hey, maybe you should do a podcast because nobody wants to listen to a bank podcast. And that's part of your job now. And I was like, okay. And he decided to, you know, the bank took care of all my first audio equipment. Like I would not have the podcast if it wasn't for them. And I wouldn't have the podcast if it wasn't for Brian being tired of traveling and for Money 2020 tiring him the hell out after 4 days of just back-to-back-to-back meetings and him living on a plane. So I guess at the end of the day, kind of it relates back to Money 2020 hilariously. But since then, it's kind of, I mean, I've maintained it through three jobs now. It started as For Fintech's Sake. Now it's Fintech Family Hour. Recently, I would say it's taken on a life of its own. Like I was able to interview Vinod Khosla at Money 2020 last year. And through the kindness and generosity of Khosla and Money 2020, that was like the first episode that we did on the rebrand for Fintech Family Hour. And since then, we've had Zach Perret from Plaid, my like name doppelganger on. We, you know, we've had a lot of like sizable folks. Next episodes coming out are Ariel Cohen, CEO of Navan. He's going to be the one actually doing the interview with Ben Horowitz at the show. So a lot of kind of overlap and a lot of, I mean, fintech's not that big of a world. So you just kind of end up sitting in the rooms with these people. It's very similar to kind of what you run after, to be honest, Alex. It's about the humanity. It's about why they do it. It's about, you know, a lot more like the emotional aspects and thinking about leadership strategies, things like that. Like, how do you get humans to human, things along those lines, more than it is, you know, like, let's talk about this API or that API. Like, I think people just get it. Plenty of that at work. And there's people much smarter than me that are capable of having those conversations. I try to, you know, lean into the humanity of it.
For me, at least, this is just more interesting. It's the thing that I want to know. It's where I'm always naturally inclined to just a normal conversation with people that I meet. And my show started very similarly. Like when the pandemic started, I was working for a company called Orchid and was the boots on the ground BD guy. I was like at every single conference in the cryptocurrency space. And all of a sudden I couldn't talk to anybody. So I just invented a podcast. And at the time that one was called Follow the White Rabbit and focused on the intersection of human rights, privacy, technology, and democracy. You know, it's still up. You can go look at, listen to all the episodes. It was great. Like my first guest was like the former CIO of Department of Homeland Security under Trump. Really interesting conversation, like episode one.
Okay, so based on your interest in life, did you follow that whole Balaji bet earlier in the year?
Yes.
Were you following all that stuff?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So that's hilarious. So I'm not 100% sure if this is going to happen yet, but a very close friend of mine wrote the Almanac of Naval Ravikant, and he's now writing and is about to release the Almanac of Balaji, and I just can't pronounce his last name or I would try to. it's releasing at the same time of the show. I think he's going to be releasing it at the show. It's interesting the way that kind of a person plays into this stuff. What did you think of the bet when it happened? What do you think of Balaji in general?
Remind me of the terms of the bet. He put up $1 million and he said $1 million, Bitcoin's going to hit like what? Like
a million.
In right?
90 days, I think he
90
said.
90 days because of inflation, right?
Yeah, it was 90 days or 30. It was some just outrageous number.
I think I was skeptical like from the get-go that it was actually going to happen. Like I didn't really believe that was going to happen. But I thought, I mean, hey, it was an expensive and brilliant marketing tactic. And he said it himself, like, hey, I just did this to make people aware of our economic situation. That's pretty genius. I don't have that kind of money to throw down on a bet like that, but really entertaining, like at the very least. What did you think?
I don't know. I mean, I honestly, the way that I feel about Balaji kind of goes back and forth. Like being close to Eric Jorgensen that wrote the book is like, I don't know, man. Part of me enjoys the drama of it. the other part of me is like, good God Almighty, Balaji, like, stop bringing this much doubt into the financial system. Like, we have a fiat currency financial system here, and like, we kind of need to have that keep going. And the world that he was like putting out there is like not a positive world, I don't think. We want a lot of the things that you and I are talking about, right? But I think we also want our fiat dollar system to be able to function at the same, like, we don't want to displace the entire economy as we have it today. Like, stop that. But maybe some of the other Web3 stuff.
I don't know him. I know people who know him, but so I can't speak for him on this one. But I would say that for me, like, I see a lot of the same problems in our economy and in our system, just like you do. And I think we need a mixed reality. You need to have both things. There should be like I love USDC. I like having money on chain and being able to self-custody it. I like the option to move my USDC to Bitcoin or to whatever, you know, so that I can be truly like self-custodied and nobody has the ability to take it from me unless they, you know, force me to send them my seed phrase, right? Like, I like that level of independence and control that crypto brings.
Yeah, I think any human would. There's a financial system that I think we have to like accept the rational like and logical constraints of. And then everything you're saying can happen inside of those logical constraints. It's just a matter of like having the discussion and building the constraints and the system together, right? Like, mixed reality.
I'm an optimist, right? Like, I believe that's possible. I think what Balaji does when he calls into question that reality, that, oh, because I think what you're saying is more likely, he wants to draw attention, right? Capture attention. Like, I think nobody, including him, wants to see like the collapse of society and like our financial system as it is because of the damage that would probably come with that. I think more it's like making a point. Like, hey, this system is so broken, we'd rather do it without you, right? Like, without the existing system, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's where I struggle. That's the struggle.
Does he actually want to do that? I don't know.
I don't think either of us can really speak for him on that piece. To me, it's more just a matter of like, I think there's so many great things that Web3 and the concept of crypto and like this wave have brought, right? I think it's very similar to AI. I think there's going to be a lot of negative to come out of it, but I think the good is going to outweigh the positive by a long shot. And the question is like, who let the dogs in or something? Like, we have to get all of them into the system. Like, we have to build the system in a way where, to your point, it can be a mixed reality. The idea of a financial system functioning outside of the financial system is really scary. And like, as much as we hate regulation, there is a reason for regulation. And anyway, that's why I'm such a proponent of the like engage with Washington. Don't run away from it.
It'd be interesting to get him on a call and like on the phone and do an interview, you know, and have that conversation, right? Like, I would love to hear from him on that. And you know, is your friend working with him on the book, or is it something that he did like separately and then just produces? I'm not familiar with it.
It's an interesting process. He basically like downloads everything they've ever said and then turns into the editor of everything they've ever said. And I don't know if that's exactly how he would phrase it, but it's pretty much that. So he gets their blessing beforehand, right? He's like, hey, I'm going to do a thing, which I think in that case was actually Balaji's idea, which is interesting. But I mean, they go back and forth. Like, he's been in contact with him. They've had some phone calls, but I don't know like how close the relationship is necessarily. I will say, I do know that Balaji is very hard to get a hold of. he's in Singapore or somewhere, and I don't think he is a fan of being found. He probably doesn't even like that we're talking about him, and he probably does know already.
Yeah, he knows. He knows. Well, we're getting to the top of the show, and I always ask the same question, and if you like this question, you can feel free to use it on your show too. It's, what have I not asked you that I should have asked?
Oh, dude. I use that question often, and it is a good one. I mean, I think we've covered a lot of it. You haven't asked when Money 2020 starts, which is October 22nd through, and it ends on the 26th. So I got to throw that ad in there. It's hard to take the tens of, I don't even know how many hours of content, hundreds of speakers. And like, you know, the hundreds of speakers are all speakers that probably could be keynotes at a lot of other conferences. And, you know, they're just kind of walking around our show. It's a hard thing to encapsulate and a hard thing to like kind of like really pull out specific things on. But I mean, I think we covered the big ones. The only other thing I would bring up is that there's a really cool trend. And this is kind of maybe like an inspiring moment for everybody. There's a really cool trend where I think the technology upstarts of the world are really starting to work with the incumbents in a way that is actually a partnership and that is actually accretive to the actual American consumer, right? Like one of the conversations we have at the show this year is, I've brought up Zach from Plaid like four times, sorry, but Zach from Plaid and the COO of Citi, and they have a big partnership together. The fact that, you know, I don't know how many years ago it was that Capital One said, no, Plaid is not allowed on my website, right? To sitting up on stage with one of the top two banks, top three banks in the world. Like Plaid wasn't started that long ago. Y'all can do it too, you know, like get out there, start fucking building. Like this is a really cool time to start something. And I think that everybody is a little scared and that makes it even cooler. So go start something, y'all.
So 2017, two beers and a coffee or two coffees and a beer. I think it was one beer. Anatoly, you know, Toly started Solana with several co-founders. And just like a week ago, they announced that Visa will be using Solana for settlement with USDC. It's Visa. Okay. I mean, the dream is being realized, like blockchain at the speed of light, NASDAQ at the speed of light across a, you know, a global network of individual operators running a blockchain with Visa. I mean, that's, it kind of sends chills up my spine. It's really cool.
Yeah, I got goosebumps right now, man. It's awesome.
It's 2023, guys. Like that is light speed movement right there, because we're talking about billions and billions of dollars in transaction volume that Visa is responsible. I mean, trillions probably, right? That Visa, that happens on Visa's network. And
not probably is, it's trillions. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So it's just really a huge deal. So on that note, get fucking building. Now is the best time. Go to Money 2020, October 22nd, right? Till when?
22nd through the 2nd is a Sunday, Monday, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 25th.
To the 25th?
Yeah.
Where can they sign up? What's the website URL?
Just go to money2020.com and it should take you directly to whatever like geography you are actually
in. Is it 2020 the word or 2020 the numbers?
The numbers. Money2020.com.
Got it. All right. You heard it here. Money2020.com. Go register. Go see Zach and all
come
the other
me.
Brilliant people walking around. You'll bump into some heavy hitters. It's worth it. Thanks, Zach, for being on the show.
Thank you, Alex, for having me, man. It's a pleasure.
You just heard the Index Podcast with your host, Alex Kahaya. If you enjoyed this episode, please give the show a 5-star rating and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your favorite streaming platform. New episodes available every other Wednesday. Thanks for tuning in.